For our reading today, I chose a poem by Alice Persons, the title of which is Meadowbrook Nursing Home. On our last visit, when Lucy was 15 and getting creaky herself, one of the nurses said to me, "Why don't you take the cat to Mrs. Harris's room? Poor thing lost her leg to diabetes last fall. She's 90 and blind, and no one comes to see her." The door is opened. I asked the tiny woman in the bed if she would like me to bring Lucy in, and she turned her head toward us. "Oh, yes, I want to touch her. I had a cat called Lily. She was so pretty, all white. She was with me for 20 years after my husband died, too. She slept with me every night. I loved her very much. It's hard in here since I can't get around." Lucy was settling in on the bed. "You won't believe it, but I used to love to dance. I was a fool for it. I even won contests. I wish I had danced more. It's funny what you miss when everything is gone." This last was a murmur. She'd fallen asleep. I lifted the cat from the bed, tiptoed out, and drove home. I tried to do some desk work, but couldn't focus. I went downstairs, pulled the shades, put on Tina Turner, and cranked it up loud. And I danced. I danced. In nicer weather, when you walk among the 300-year-old graves on the hill opposite of First Parish, you will notice an interesting inscription on some of the gravestones. The inscription says, "Memento Mori," and is usually accompanied by a skull. Of course, these old graves attract much attention among tourists and locals alike. A question teenagers always ask when I give tours to coming-of-age groups of this cemetery is, why would people want to put skulls on their gravestones? Then I test their Latin skills. I ask them, what does memento mori mean? I usually get back blank stares. In Latin, memento mori means remember you will die. Then their eyes get really big. For teenagers rarely think about death, especially their own. Life is so new to them that they cannot imagine it not going on and on. Now we who have lived a little bit longer than they know differently, but we forget too. Despite the occasional suicide or the friend who dies of cancer too young or the victim of a tragic accident, we are very much like those teenagers, never giving much thought to graveyards and to gravestones and to what might be written on them. We too forget that we will die ourselves. Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not even this year. But the gravestones speak the truth. Memento mori. Remember, you will die. Roughly 20 years ago, I began the spiritual practice of meditating on my own death every day. Prompted by the work of ecologist Joanna Macy, I took up the practice of thinking each morning that today might be the last day of my life, because I cannot know what will happen to me in any given day. It's just as likely that today will be the day that I will die as any other. If I make it through this service, I might not make it through the afternoon. And if I make it through the afternoon, I might not make it through tomorrow. Heaven knows what this snowstorm will do. Today might be the last day that I am alive. Or tomorrow, or someday next week, or next month, or next year. I simply do not know when I will die. None of us do. And yet we fool ourselves into thinking that we have lots and lots of time left. Unless we are terminally ill or very old, most of us do not imagine that our time could be very short. We live as if each day did not matter. We live as if each day was not our last, and in doing so, we miss out on a lot. By considering the possibility that each day might be my last day alive, I free myself to love each day for exactly what it is. Loving each day for itself does not mean that I neglect to plan for the future, but it does mean that I do not get overly caught up in planning and in striving. Meditating on my own death each day simply reminds me to live the day that I have been given, to see the full measure of its joys and sorrows, to not miss the little interactions with people that mean so much, to not jam too much into it that it lacks a sweetness, to not discard it like something to get through so that a better day can come, because there is no better day for any of us. There is only today. Tomorrow is just a figment of our imaginations, and we would be foolish if we spent too much time living in a non-existent tomorrow while ignoring the beautifully present today. Now, I don't have to tell you this, but we humans are striving creatures. We want more and more of everything. We want safety and security. We want comfort and pleasure. We want guarantees that things will turn out right. We want things to go our way. We humans like to be right. This striving, of course, is the main cause of suffering for us as well. Our attachment to worldly goods blinds us to the freedom of renunciation. Clinging to our lives prevents us from living them. Our insistence on getting our way makes us unable to adapt when we lose. Self-righteous anger clouds our judgment and blinds our sight. We humans like to control everything. We like to control one another. We like to control in the name of future progress. And yet, what does it get us? At the end of a striving day, what we are left with is just another striving day ahead of us tomorrow. I would urge us to stop living each day as if it were simply a prelude to the next one. I would urge us to live today for today with much less thought about tomorrow. For it is only in renouncing worldly temptations that we will be able to live a rich spiritual life. There's an ancient teaching story that's told about a wise rabbi who wanted to be more in touch with God. Knowing that he would never be able to put aside his worldly duties and cares at home, the rabbi set off into the wilderness to fast for 40 days and 40 nights. He knew this time would not be easy. He knew that he would be hungry and weak at the end of it. He knew the fast would test him in mind, body, and spirit. But what he was not prepared for were the grandiose temptations that would come his way at the end of 40 days. Here is one version of this ancient story. Full of the Holy Spirit, the wise rabbi left the Jordan River and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness. For 40 days and nights he was tested. He ate nothing during those days, and when the time was up, he was very hungry. The devil, playing on his hunger, gave him a test. "Since you are a man of God, command that stone to turn into a loaf of bread," the devil said. The rabbi answered by quoting Deuteronomy, "It takes more than bread to really live on." For the second test, the devil led him up and spread out all the kingdoms of the earth on display for him at once. The devil said, "They're yours in all their splendor to serve your pleasure. I'm in charge of them all and can turn them over to whomever I wish. Worship me, and the whole works is yours." Again, the rabbi refused, backing his refusal with Deuteronomy, saying, "Worship the Lord your God and only the Lord your God. Serve God with absolute single-heartedness." For the third test, the devil took him to Jerusalem and put him high atop the temple. He said, "If you are a man of God, jump off this temple. It is written, isn't it, that he placed you in the care of angels to protect you? They will catch you. You won't even so much as stub your toe on a stone." "Yes," said the wise rabbi, "it is also written, don't dare tempt the Lord your God." That completed the testing, and the devil retreated. Despite his hunger, the rabbi in our teaching story sees through the temptations. He can see that turning a stone into bread would not satisfy his hunger for very long. Selling his soul for all of the kingdoms of the earth would still make him subservient, and throwing himself off a high place would be a foolish way of playing with God. Rather than imagining himself rich and fed and invincible, the rabbi preferred to leave the wilderness a humble man. He preferred to return to his life with a clear sense of purpose. He preferred to enjoy regular life more than the promises of riches and power. Part of the reason this ancient teaching story has been told for thousands of years is that it requires us as well to consider what we have already done in similar situations and how our decisions affect our lives. When have we taken the easy bread? When have we sold out for wealth and power? When have we foolishly tested those we love? Much of the world lives in a state of striving daily for ease, wealth, power, and invincibility. Much of the world readily yields to these temptations when they come along. From the White House to the boardroom to street gangs, we hear the message, "Take what you can from anyone you can and be glad you've got what you've got." The idea that we should get as much money or power as we can today, that we might use it for our own benefit from tomorrow, flies in the face of spiritual wisdom. Striving demands that we care more about things than about people. Striving demands that we care more about ourselves than others. Striving demands that we care more about tomorrow than today. But it does not have to be this way. Memento mori. Remember, you will die. One day, maybe soon, all that will be left of the physical you will be some bones or some ashes and a tiny piece of ground and maybe a stone with your name on it. There's a reason the penitential season of Lent begins with Ash Wednesday's declaration, "From dust you came, to dust you shall return." But as anyone who has ever had these words spoken to them knows, there is life in these words. There is hope in these words. There is action in these words. From dust you came, to dust you shall return, does not mean stop living and give up. And just the opposite, it means start living like you really mean it. Wake up to today. Do something good with your days. Do not walk through life like a zombie. Memento mori. Remember you will die. Get your butt in gear. The trick, of course, is to live well without striving. That is the spiritual life. It would be a mistake to simply do more and more without looking at what we are doing and why. I'm not saying be busier. I'm saying live today. Enjoy this hour, these beautiful people among whom you sit, beautiful yourself. Enjoy the closing hymn that is coming up. Delight in a conversation at coffee hour. Look at the beauty of the snow falling on your way home. Savor your Sunday lunch. Live today, at least clear up until about 1 o'clock. When you start living for today, you will find that you actually accomplish far less than you used to. You will find that many things that used to preoccupy you do not matter that much anymore. As you learn to live for today, you will find that you are less jangled, you are less reactionary, you are less grumpy, you are less irritable. Politics will distress you less, and thank goodness for that. Money will not hold such an allure. Ambition will diminish. And don't worry that the world will stop or collapse. It won't. But you will be different. You will be more alive. You will be part of the healing of the world. And tomorrow, when you wake, when you first see yourself in the bathroom mirror, take a moment and really look at yourself. See your messed up bedhead hair. See your face unshaven or unmade up. Look at the wrinkles on your forehead or around your eyes. Notice the sleepy way your face still looks. Then smile at yourself. Give yourself a loving look. And then say out loud to your reflection, "This could be our last day, you and I. Let's make it a good one." Then go out to the kitchen and make breakfast. Memento mori. Remember, you will die. But you haven't yet. Today is your day. Today you are alive. So be it. Amen.